talk about today was data compression or source coding for networks, and maybe the power of imprecision will become more clear as we get into the topic. So when we talk about data compression in network systems, the goal, of course, is to represent information efficiently, to use it in whatever your network is. Today's network applications tend to be rather complicated, and we're interested in understanding all kinds of things. Among them are performance bounds, how well could you hope to do in these kinds of systems, efficient algorithms, how do you do this well practically, and then trade-offs, what are the trade-offs between complexity and performance and so on in network systems. And really the problem that I wanted to get at today is that when we think about compression for network systems, where we are right now is roughly here. That is, what we understand really well is how to do compression in a point-to-point network. Or maybe you could stretch it a little bit and say, well, we understand pretty well how to do compression in very small networks. But where we'd like to be is doing compression and information representation efficiently in large, complicated networks. And we're very, very far from doing this and understanding this today. And so that's the question, is how do we bridge that gap between where we are today, very small systems that we understand pretty well, and where we'd like to be, very large, complicated systems with possibly many correlated sources represented all over this network, and many demands, that is, different nodes are requesting different subsets of those sources, and we'd like to somehow represent our information in the way that is most efficient for the network as a whole. And so the question you might ask yourself is, given that people have been working on network data compression problems for over 30 years now, why is there such a big gap between where we are now, these really small network systems, and where we'd like to be, a large sensor network or something? And there are many reasons, or there are many possible reasons that you could put forward as to why there's such a big gap, and I thought I'd tell you about three of those today. So the first answer to why is there such a big gap between what we wish we could do and what we can actually do is because even solved problems are difficult to solve. And what do I mean by that? Well, let me explain it in terms of a particular example. And this is an example that was solved back in 1975. So it really is 30 plus years old. And here's the question. We imagine that there are two nodes. You can imagine these as two sensors or two individuals, two people, whatever. And one of them observes X and only X, and the other observes Y and only Y, and there's no communication between them. So I observe X, you observe Y, and we're both trying to communicate to some third party who's actually only interested in X. So the goal is just to somehow send some description of X at a rate, let's call Rx, Rx bits per symbol of the original data, a description of X. We're also going to send a description of Y at some rate, Ry, but the whole goal is just to reconstruct X. So now why would you describe Y at all? Well, Y is some sort of side information that may be useful to the decoder in building X. So for example, if Rx is constrained to be too small to describe X alone, but X and Y are dependent random variables, they're somehow correlated, you might be able to use some information about Y and whatever information you're allowed to have about X to give you together a complete description of X. So back in 1975, this problem was posed and solved by Alsfede and Kerner. And when I say posed and solved, I mean that they gave both a result that they showed that you can achieve, and they showed that you couldn't hope to do any better than that. So they really have a full characterization of the region. Now, I know everybody's backgrounds here may be different, so how many of you have not seen basic information theory? You know, people are coming from all different fields. Okay, there's some. I'll try and give you at least an intuition about what these means for those of you who don't have information theory background. So the answer that Alsfede and Kerner came up with is actually pretty intuitive. And here is the description of that answer, but let me talk you through it. Let's look at the description of Y first. The rate Ry has to be greater than or equal to the mutual information between some auxiliary random variable U and the original Y. Basically what that says is you're going to come up with some auxiliary random variable, some other description U, and describe just what U shares in common with Y. Just whatever information they share, nothing about U that isn't relevant to understanding Y. And then the rate that you need to describe X is the conditional entropy of X given U, that is whatever uncertainty is left in X once U is already known to that decoder. And there's some Markov condition that says that everything that U knows about X, it has to learn through Y, which is a reasonable constraint. And they also told us something about how big this alphabet size of U can be. And that fully characterizes what is and is not achievable in this simple problem. Now, when I say that this problem is solved, that's what I mean, that we have these equations. When I say that they're tough to solve, really what you have here, if I give you some particular x and y, that is, if I tell you x and y are binary and here's their joint distribution or whatever it is, now you have an optimization problem to do. You now have to figure out what is the optimal u that meets this Markov constraint that gives you the best trade-off between x and y. And in fact, for every rate rx that you allow yourself, there'll be a different u, and so you have not just one optimization problem. Really, you have a whole family of optimization problems just to know what the region looks like in this simple so-called solved problem. And it turns out that actually solving that, even for very simple examples, binary X, binary Y, maybe a binary symmetric relationship between them, turn out to be very difficult to solve. And so even though this problem is kind of solved, it's kind of not solved too, if you really want to know the answer for your source. And so that's part of the problem. Even these solved problems are difficult. Okay, that's one part of the problem. What are the other parts of the problem? Well, here's a second piece of this puzzle. New bounds are hard to find. So Alsvedi and Kerner solved that problem in 1975. That was a three-node network. If I add a just slightly different configuration of those three nodes, change the problem a little bit to, say, this one, where one node sees X and Y, another node sees Y, a third node sees Z, and the whole goal is for this network to allow us to describe X to the final node in this network, very difficult to solve, and having solved a previous problem doesn't necessarily give you that much insight into the next problem. And in fact, even when you get this one, well, it won't necessarily tell you that much about even a slight variation on that same theme. And so a second problem, why are we so far from our goal, is that each one of these problems seems to be a new battle. We get some insight from solving previous problems, but it doesn't tell you as much as you'd hope to if your goal is really to get to thousands of nodes in a network from our current, say, three. So that's another reason that there's such a big gap. And then the final reason, not the final reason really, but the final reason I'll tell you about today for why there's such a big gap between where we are and where we'd like to be, is that code design is really hard. Code design is hard, not just in a gosh, gee darn, it's hard kind of way, but even in an NP hard kind of way. Code design is difficult. And so there's a big gap between what people do in theory and what people do in practice, and I think that's another thing contributing to the fact that where we are now is really far from where we'd like to be. And so I thought I would tell you about these three problems and maybe give you some insight into how we might tackle and get past these problems to where we'd like to be. So let's look at some solutions. So the first problem I brought up was this issue that even solved problems are difficult to solve. And what I'd like to propose in talking about how to get around this problem is that we as information theorists have spent a lot of time trying to get really, really exact answers to really specific problems. And maybe a little bit of imprecision would help. Not imprecision in the sense that, oh, a little bit of rate would be okay. You know, we'd like to get concrete answers to these questions. But maybe a little bit of imprecision, moving away from these achievability results and matching converses to bounds that we can actually find and calculate easily, would be a step in the right direction. And so here's an example of one such result that you might think about. And it's a result for exactly this network. Since I don't have the network on the next slide, I'll just remind you what this problem was. So again, this was the coded side information problem, the one solved by Alsvedi and Kerner. And the idea, again, is just that we'd like to describe X to this decoder using both the description of X itself and a coded description of some side information Y. It's related, actually, to the Slepian-Wolf problem, for those of you who are familiar with it. But in this case, Y is not known precisely to the decoder. It's known, it too, we pay a cost for its description. So it's known only through that description. And in thinking about that question, which again is in some sense solved and in some sense really, really not solved, one of the questions that you might ask yourself is, well, can we get some ideas of what that region actually looks like in practice for a given distribution? And here's some idea of what that region looks like. So you know that the total rate, Rx plus Ry, needed to describe the source X has to be greater than or equal to the entropy of that X. We're doing lossless compression here. So the entropy of source X is the shortest description length you could hope for if you were just describing X by itself. And certainly describing Y, the total rate of Rx plus Ry has to be greater than or equal to H of X, which gives us an easy lower bound. Further, you know that that the rate Rx can't possibly be less than the entropy of X given Y. That's the amount of uncertainty that's left over in X, even if Y were perfectly known to the decoder. So another bound that we have right off the top is that Rx has to itself be greater than or equal to H of X given Y, which is this line right here. And so in trying to understand what's going on in this problem and trying to turn this optimization problem into concrete bounds, it's very easy often to come up with lower bounds on what is possible and what isn't possible in your particular network. Now in this case, we also asked ourselves two simple questions that give us two more points of interest in this region. And let me tell you about this point first. The question that we asked ourselves here was, what is the smallest rate R of Y at which the total rate can be equal to H of X? That is, what is the smallest rate R of Y for which the rate Rx plus Ry equals H of X is it actually achievable? How far can we remain on this line? Because that's certainly also an interesting point in this region. And that turns out to be something that we can solve for. We called it K of X and Y, and we have a nice simple equation for it. It involves no optimization, it's just a direct calculation. The other interesting question that we asked ourselves was this one. If you imagine Rx going down to its lowest rate, we know the lowest rate for Rx is H of X given Y, and the lowest rate that you could hope for with Ry in that case is I of X and Y. Is that rate actually achievable? That is, can I, if my job is to describe Y, just extract from Y the part that's useful in understanding X, and just describe that at a rate so that the total rate is as small as possible? In general, the answer is no. We can't generally achieve the mutual information. That is, if I know Y but I don't know X, it's hard for me to come up with a description of just the useful part of Y to you if you're interested in reconstructing not Y but X. But we are able to calculate precisely what that optimal value is. We gave that another name. We called it J. We're not very alphabetical here. Sorry about that. But that's the way it goes sometimes. And that's also something that is no longer in the form of an optimization, but now something that you can calculate precisely. And by knowing just these two values, it turns out that we have a pretty good idea of what our optimal region looks like, at least in some cases. That is, we now have easily calculated upper and lower bounds on what the true lower convex hull of the achievable rate region is. It gives you a pretty good idea of what you can and can't do in this system for many real problems, and maybe that should be enough. That is, if we really want to get to big networks, maybe characterizing precisely what happens in this little region is not the right place to be putting our energy. Now, it turns out that in many cases, as I say, in many cases, approximate bounds are enough. In many cases, you can show, because these things are easy to calculate themselves, that the upper bound and the lower bound are very close together, and that gives you a good idea of what the region looks like. In some cases, that's actually not true. And the binary source is one example of a case where it turns out that the gap between the upper and the lower bounds are very big. And maybe in those cases, you actually do want to go in and calculate things precisely. It turns out these problems are surprisingly difficult to do precisely, but we have done it for this particular example. That is, if you have binary X and binary Y that are related through a binary symmetric channel, we can now calculate what the optimal trade-off looks like. And the optimal trade-off that we get is this blue curve here. I put it with the red bound. The red bound is the bound, sorry, I'll go back a slide. The red bound is the bound characterized by the two points, J of X and Y and K of X and Y that we've calculated. And we see that in this example at least, the true optimal curve is quite close to that bound. In any case, okay, so that was problem number one. We've been worrying about doing things so precisely that we could spend all our lives on three-node networks and never make it to anywhere close to the networks that we're really interested in. maybe a bit of imprecision would help. Problem number two is that new bounds are a challenge, so if I change the network a little bit, coming up with the bounds for this network is also really difficult, and that they don't generalize well. So again, if I solve this one, it won't necessarily tell me how to solve the next one, so. And what I'd like to propose, at least as an approach to tackle these kinds of problems, is that we start thinking about ways to build systematic bounds. And let me just use this this as an example. It's a line network. The idea here is that we have a collection of nodes, they're all in a line, and they're all directed, they're all connected by directed links. So everything points right here. The first node sees x1 and wants to reconstruct y1. The second node sees x2 and wants to reconstruct y2, and so on. So each node has some observations about the world and is hoping to reconstruct some subset of the things that came before, and we'll talk just about lossless data compression here. So the goal is, can we break this problem down into a collection of smaller problems whose solutions would at least sum to give us some sort of bound on the achievable region of the original problem? And rather than telling you about it in its full generality, let me give you a simpler case, a three-node network. We've generalized it to these long strings of nodes, but maybe the three-node case is easier to talk through as a simple example. So the question here is the following. We have three nodes in a row. The first one sees two sources, x and y. The second of those nodes just wants to reconstruct y. The third node sees a third source, z, which is jointly distributed with x and y, maybe useful side information, and he wants to reconstruct it, just s. Looks pretty simple, and we'd like to understand what the lossless rate region is. It turns out, not a easy lossless rate region to derive. One way that you might tackle this problem is by simplifying it. So for example, imagine that this node's demands have already been met. So here, y was something that he was interested in reconstructing. Let's assume for a minute that whatever rate needed to happen for this guy to figure out y has already gone through the system, and therefore this guy now knows y. And now you can ask a simpler question, well, how much rate is required to just get the remaining demands to be met? That is, how much rate is required if this node already knows y, this node still knows z, and this one is just interested in reconstructing x. And that problem, too, turns out to be non-trivial to solve. I've redrawn it up here. But it looks very much like another problem. In fact, it looks very much like the problem that we talked about originally, which is the coded side information problem. You'll notice that this node's job, he's learning y, and he's hoping, or he's seeing y, and he's hoping to send, in addition to whatever description of x is going through this network, he's hoping to send some description of y that may be useful in reconstructing the desired source x, and therefore solving this problem might be useful in helping us solve this problem. This problem is just that coded side information problem where I've taken this out of the line and put it on the side. And this one actually, because it's so much like the Alsfeda and Kerner problem, is very easy to solve. The point then is that we've turned our problem into something that we can solve very easily, and from that we can build up a code for the next more complicated network, and from that build up a code for the next more complicated network, and so on, by simply building codes for each of these simpler problems and adding the rate regions needed to support those descriptions. And by doing that, we get not a tight region on the rate region for this problem, but good upper and lower bounds on what is and isn't possible in this network. The key here is that we've turned a very complicated problem or family of problems, all possible line networks no matter how long, into a collection of much simpler problems. In fact, really just one much simpler problem repeated over and over again, and come up with nice systematic ways to come up with bounds for the long, complicated network just by solving much simpler problems. And here's an example of a result. So here is actual calculated bounds. Here's a particular joint distribution between some source x and some source y, and the conditional distribution of z given x and y. And here are the upper and lower bounds that we get for this particular problem. You'll notice that they're quite close together, in this example at least, and they give us something that we can actually calculate, which was not true of any of the bounds that preceded.
Do they eventually become meaningless bounds, or really, or are they staying kind of pipe? I mean, if you keep layering and
It depends very much on your distribution. So they don't stay tight in general. We don't have tight bounds. But in many of the examples that we've run, they do tend to be quite close because the strategies that we're using are not naive. They're not optimal, and we can prove that they're not optimal, but they really are trying to take maximal advantage of all the information. The idea is to say, well, when we imagine meeting the demands of one particular node, suppose that all the demands of all prior nodes have been met. We don't need to pay anything additional for that rate, and we'd like to take advantage of that in solving the next node's demands. And yeah, that doesn't take into account everything, but it does turn out to give quite good bounds, at least in the examples that we've investigated so far.
It's a completely scaled approach to solving this problem.
It actually, the problem doesn't seem to be that, I mean, you could worry about as you get longer and longer and longer, these error bounds are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. We don't seem to run into that problem. The problem is more that where these bounds turn out to be loose is when intermediate nodes have actually learned something that's useful to you in addition to the demand itself. That's something that we're not good at characterizing yet. So we may not have quite the final decomposition, you know, the best possible decomposition, but we have a nice, simple, systematic way of tackling these big networks. And it doesn't really seem to have that issue that you worry about, that these things get bigger and bigger as the network gets longer and longer. But you might be able to construct an example, you know, to specifically do that if you wanted to. Oh. So the last problem that I thought I'd tell you about, at least very briefly, is that code design is hard. And as I mentioned before, code design is not just tough. Code design is NP hard for many of these problems. And here's a simple example. All the previous examples I told you about were about lossless data compression. And this is actually an example about lossy data compression. And I thought I'd tell you about this problem in just the point-to-point network because it's already hard there. But I'll tell you a little bit about the ramifications for network data compression systems as well. So this is a lossy data compression system. Basically, the idea is you imagine that you have observations, in this case, in two-dimensional space according to some distribution of two-dimensional space. And you're trying to come up with a good collection of representative values so that no matter what you see, you're not going to describe that perfectly. You're instead just going to describe one of these representative values, and you're hoping that it's a good representative of everything that might get mapped to it. So you're trying to make the squared error distortion, expected squared error, between what was truly observed and how it was represented be as small as possible, and design this for some distribution. Often these distributions are given to you in the form of a training set. So you're given n data samples from this two-dimensional space, and you're trying to come up with the best k representative values for those n data samples. We in data compression think of this as an encoder. The encoder's job is to partition this space. So it says that everything in this region will be represented by the same value, everything in this region will be represented by a different value, and so on. And a decoder. The decoder just maps which region you fell into what the representative value is going to be for that region. And as I mentioned, even when you're just trying to come up with two representative values in more than one-dimensional space, so say two-dimensional space like I've drawn in my pictures, this problem is NP-hard, which is a disappointing result for those of us who want to design good codes in practice. So the question is, what do you do then? And what has actually been done in practice for the most part is people have just come up with heuristics or locally optimal design algorithms, things about which we can't say much about how good the final results will be in the end. So we have all kinds of strategies for building codes. We can say very little about how good those codes actually will be in the end. And what we're suggesting here is an approach that is very popular for many problems, although hasn't shown up very much for data compression before, which is approximation algorithms. So we'd like to design algorithms that are provably good. That is, we'd like to design a code that guarantees performance, say, within a multiplicative factor of 1 plus epsilon of the best that you could ever hope for. And it turns out that while optimal design, getting the truly optimal performance, is NP-hard, approximation algorithms are not NP-hard for this problem. And in fact, not only for this problem, but for a wide family of network data compression problems, we can design good approximation algorithms that are actually linear in the size of your training set. And in order to do that, what we did is we developed a tool, which we call the DataNet, which is just a tool that will help you design good codes. And basically what a data net is it says, instead of allowing yourself to design a code that could have reproductions anywhere, that is, this collection of reproductions in this space could have been anywhere in two-dimensional space, we're going to give you a finite set of possibilities. We're going to give you, hey, look, here's a good collection. If you choose the best K from our collection, you'll be guaranteed to have a good code. If we could design such a thing and that thing were small, that is, its size didn't grow with n, the size of your training set, then you could just try all of them. And there would be, if we could really design such a thing to guarantee that there would be a good one in there, you'd sort of be willing to try all the possibilities and figure out what is the best one of that collection. And so how do you go about designing such a good candidate collection? Well, we called this candidate collection a data net. And the idea is that we want our data net to guarantee that if you use the right collection, the right subset of K values from this data net, your performance will be within 1 plus epsilon of that optimal performance. How in the world could we possibly guarantee that when we don't know what that optimal performance is, nor where the right code word value should be? And maybe I actually made slides for this, but maybe the better way to tell you about that would be to draw you pictures. Am I allowed to deviate from the slide? So I'll draw you a picture. So the idea is this. Imagine, I'll keep this in two-dimensional space, but the dimension is arbitrary. I just can't draw arbitrary dimensions for you. So imagine that we're in two-dimensional space, and we're trying to come up with a good candidate collection of code words for your data. So you're going to give me a data set, and I'm trying to come up with a good candidate collection. Now, you would know that that... Oh? Good night. Good time for bed. So the idea of a good candidate collection, again, is that you want performance within this factor 1 plus epsilon of the optimal. And what we're going to do is the following. Imagine for a minute, this is something that you don't have, but imagine for a minute that you did. You could look at where the truly optimal code words for your data set are. And let's suppose that you're trying to design, how many did I draw? 4 of them. So you're trying to come up with a good representative collection for these 4 code words whose location you don't know. Okay. And these code words are being used in some code book. Let me just draw you some Voronoi regions here. I guess they'll look roughly like this. So this is the code that we're trying to approximate, something like that. We don't know where these values are. If we could design them, we wouldn't need to design a data net. But imagine that you're trying to design something that will be good representative values no matter where these things turn out to be. What would you have to do? One thing that you'd like to do is you'd like to be sure that no matter where your code word values are, there's something reasonably close by, right? So somehow in this data net collection, it's okay if there are extras in other places, but you'd like to hope that no matter where your optimal code words happen to be, there's something close by. Now, imagine for this particular code word, or for this, I'm sorry, let's say that these circle things are the data net points and there are extras of them around, and the X's are the optimal code words of some optimal code book that we don't know. You can imagine that anything within, say, this square, if the code word were located anywhere in this square, it would be mapped to this particular data net point, whereas if it were in this particular square, it would be mapped to a different data net point, and so on, and these regions may be different sizes and so on. What you'd like to do is, around each of these regions, you'd like to draw sort of a buffer zone. We'll call that a near region, and we've represented our near regions by these A1 through AM to go with our data net points, Y1 through YM. And the thing that's good about a buffer zone is you notice that if the buffer zone is big enough, no matter where you are outside of the buffer zone, the difference between the distance to the truly optimal code word and the distance to the data net point to which it was represented can't be too far off. In fact, if we design our buffer zones carefully enough, we can guarantee that the distance from X to the data net point that you chose for this mu and the distance between X and the true code word mu differ from each other by at most a factor 1 plus epsilon. So that's one thing that we'd like to guarantee with this data net is that as long as you're not too close to a particular data net point, the cost of mapping to the true code word, I'm sorry, to the data net point instead of the true code word is at most a factor 1 plus epsilon. The other thing that we'd like to guarantee, obviously we're not going to be able to get a multiplicative factor that's small for anything that's too close in, because if your true value were right here, it could be much, much further to the data net point if you get too close to these points. So the other thing that we'd like to guarantee is that the total distortion of everything that gets, that's close in, that's inside this near region, mapping to the data net point, is small. So these near regions themselves can't be too big, because we'd like the total cost of everything that goes, that's inside the near region, getting mapped to a particular data net point, to be small. How small do we want it to be? Well, we forced it to be less than or equal to epsilon times the optimal performance of the whole code divided by k. K is the number of code words. By just getting these two properties, it turns out that these two properties are sufficient to guarantee, if you could design a collection of data net points with those two properties, that would be sufficient to give you a good collection of candidate code words. And it turns out that we can design such a collection. And I won't take you through the design because I'm basically, oops, I'm out of time. But we can design such a collection. Just ignore what's behind the curtain. And we can design that, in fact, in time that's linear in the size of the data set. So it grows only linearly with the size of the data set that you're trying to design for. We've gone from NP-hard to linear by paying this cost of 1 plus epsilon. And it turns out this tool is useful not only for designing lossy data compression systems in point-to-point networks, but in a broad family of network data compression systems. The same tool allows you to do 1 plus epsilon optimal design for a broad class of possible of interesting problems. So what are the conclusions? Network source coding provides many interesting and very challenging problems for us to work on. But maybe one thing that we can do to make real progress in work in moving from very, very small networks to really large examples that we'd like to solve is give up this need to get everything exactly precise. So for example, in this last case, by moving from truly optimal design to 1 plus epsilon approximations, we went from NP-hard to linear time. And that kind of benefit is huge. I mean, that actually makes it practical. Solving one network at a time probably isn't the right way to go. Maybe these approximate solutions will help us get to our goal. So.